live for episode 215 Radio Impound Podcast. July 9th, 2020, 7:14 p.m. Again, it's live, so we got to behave. Keep it minivan friendly, as I like to say.
That's fine.
What's going on, Jason?
We're here at work, just finishing up a good day, another good day at the office. And, you know, just getting new products, trying to get new products out and see what's going on with the race events. You know, which ones we're going to be able to run in, which ones we're going to be able to race in, which ones we're not. So, yeah, working.
Did Allison, last night we were recording, we were giving away all the names of the tires. Did Allison come down on you today for that?
Oh, she did, yeah. Ugh. She's like, don't give away any more of our names. Just kidding. But no.
I see that live just went live up there. So I don't know if we, if it missed the first 30. Anyway, this is episode 215. As you can see from the scrolling ticker below. If you have a question, drop them in the comments and we'll flash them up on the screen. If you have anything football related, that'd be good for me. Video game, wrestling. Jason's here for all the RC.
Yeah. So what, I don't want to start on wrestling. I was going to bring up something about wrestling, but we won't do that first.
All right.
Cause I listen to some of those wrestling podcasts too. And yes, I'll watch, I listen to them on YouTube, you know, during the day. And, it's actually a lot of fun, listening to that stuff. You know, it gets there. There's an era window that I kind of know what's going on from the 80s and the early 90s because that's, you know, when I watched. But yeah, that was a fun. It's fun to listen to some of that stuff and behind, you know, like you talk about Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
Listening to him, he's funny. And
Bruce Prichard is your favorite, Pritchard. Right?
I like Bruce.
Something to wrestle with.
Mm-hmm. And Bischoff, we were listening to Bischoff's for a while.
83 weeks.
Yep. It's good stuff too.
Yeah. Well, we'll get off that.
But yeah.
Though there is a pay-per-view this weekend, but we'll talk about that later on. So
somebody will ask about that.
Yeah, somebody.
Because I made a little, I got my little agenda here. Sorry. It's
doing the whole green screen effect again.
Yeah. But yeah, we had a lot happen in the last couple weeks, so I made a couple notes. You know, we ended up having to cancel our INS race, which was going to be a Hobby Action in Arizona. And, you know, we had Larry on the show. We were talking about how we were going to do the race, and everything was looking good and looking up, and we had a good plan there. Split schedule, and then their government kind of changed some of their guidelines.
Yeah,
but, in Arizona.
Yeah,
and, you know, me and Larry and I talked, and we just kind of decided that, you know, it probably just wasn't going to work. So, he wanted to be safe, and I agree it was a good idea. And you know, he's like, we'll race another day, and he's right. So, it was unfortunate. Thought we had, you know, we had a good plan kind of going, and we were going to try it with this alternate schedule, kind of a split schedule.
Yeah, that was going to be, I was interested in see how that worked.
Yeah, so. We had the boys going to be ready out there and racing, rocking and rolling. So, but yeah, now what's funny is the boys, Mayfield, Spencer, and Jackson, and the guys that you know, race with us, they headed out to California this weekend for the JBRL. They're gonna have at Thunder Alley, and Thunder Alley is just such a cool track in California. This is for 8-scale JBRL 8-scale, so they're heading out for that. So they're there now. They're set up. Spencer's dad's already sending me photos. Let's check them out here. I don't know what I'm going to do with. I got four more pictures of Spencer. But The dads are proud, aren't they?
Yeah.
The dads are proud. So, yeah, disappointing that we had to cancel our race. It would have been this weekend, actually. And so they're heading out to the JBRL instead, running some 8-scale, and it's actually should be good. They're going to run the track dry there. At least that's what they're saying. So it's hot. So it's hot at the JBRL. So, and they're going to run the track dry. So the video should be awesome because the guys are going to be hauling butt on that track. Usually when they run a track dry in California and they can kind of sweep it or blow it off and it's got a groove, man, they get down on that surface.
Charlie Mack says, I hope we can still run the ENATs.
Yeah, that was one that they kind of postponed there at Flowood. Yeah, I was looking forward to going back to Flowood because we haven't been there since one of our last Clash races was there. It was either 2012 or 2013, I think, was our last time we went. Or I went to Flowood. Dave Duncan was there several other times. Maybe Paul went once for one of their electric events or one of their July events. But yeah, looking forward to getting back over there to Flowood, Mississippi.
And Justin, don't get me started on that. Bluestones. I'm going to go nuts. I'll just die laughing the whole time again.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah. Hope it does come true, though.
So we had a couple of events that I wrote down here that have happened since our last podcast, which one of them was the off-road shootout, which what this is Jimmy Babcock for many years had the Hot Rod Hobbies. We used to call it the Hot Rod Shootout. He changed his name a couple times to like Off-Road Shootout and Hot Rod Off-Road Shootout and Short Course Spectacular. He threw all kinds of names on it. but it was really the Hot Rod Shootout. And he just stopped. They stopped getting a good turnout for the race. There was a time where they would get 400 plus there. And it was, this was in Saugus, California, is where the race was. At his outdoor track, and the guys loved that race. They loved the Hot Rod Shootout. And as indoor racing just started getting more and more popular for some reason, the turnout was deteriorating. There was some events around it, which was causing maybe a little bit, but I mean, the guys that were still going, that were running our race were still trying to do the shootout too. So, but what he decided to do is change the date a little bit, and then he went indoors with the shootout. So last year was the first one. They ran a Bakersfield at Rain Man's track in Bakersfield, California. And last year, first one indoors, and then this year they ran it indoors. And Yokomo really had a great race there. I know Joe Pillars talked that he really was – kind of wanting to get a lot of the team guys from that general area over to the shootout in Bakersfield. And they did a good job. Mayfield ended up TQing and winning 2-wheel and 4-wheel. Those are the classes he ran. And Brock Champlin did really good for Associated and for us. And then Cavallari did well in 4-wheel. I think he got second in 4-wheel. Ron Duvall did really well, also running the Associated stuff. Cav was running his S-Works stuff. And so he did good in 4-wheel with his S-Works. 2-wheel, I think he got maybe fourth or fifth, which was too bad. But his 4-wheel was running good. A lot of people were kind of curious about that, how that's been going. And Brock was really fast individual lap time wise. He was, you know, as quick as Mayfield, I think, in the lap times, pretty close. But Ryan just a little more, I think, driving main event savvy, finishing off those qualifiers and main events with no crashes. So he won, I think, in two straight mains, didn't have to go to a third main. So he was pretty happy about the trip.
Hey, Danny.
So the off-road shootout. And then we had Matt Gonzalez won. Matthew, he won one of the classes. I want to say he won 17.5 two wheel. I think Joe Pillars won 13.5 truck and 13.5 four wheel, I think. And another driver of ours won the stock truck 17.5 class. So we had a really good race there, and so did Yokomo. A lot of results. And yeah, I was watching that online a little bit, watching the scoring during that weekend. That was really neat. Have you seen my TLR 8XT? No?
I haven't.
I guess you'll have to put up a photo. Uh-oh.
Oh. Did I order a DR10 team car?
Yeah, that's one of the new things that's Associated released today. I was just thinking yesterday, I was just like, man, is anybody on the AE social media page? Like, this thing's been pretty dry, nothing going on. And all of a sudden today, boom, DR10, which is the drag car now, is a kit form.
Oh, okay.
So they've actually had two different RTRs that come out, one with an orange body, one with a green body. We did an unboxing on the orange body one. It was pretty fun. And then I never did one of those unboxing videos before. And that's actually, it's a little nerve wracking in a way, because once you cut the tape of the box, you can't do it again. So it's
right. Like, yeah.
And then you're worried that there might be something wrong, you know, when you're working on it, or
it's too much pressure.
But it went well. It
was a lot of anxiety build up there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, today they came out with the kit version. So now you can essentially get, you know, the car, and it doesn't come with all the electronics. So you can use your own electronics, a little more of a racer kit.
Wow.
That's what Paul's alluding to. So yeah, the off-road shootout.
So do I need to order it out, or is that just going to be sent to me?
You might have to. We got Sean Ireland coming on the show, and he's the guy that you should ask.
Oh, all right.
That would be the guy to ask.
Okay.
He's your guy there. And look at this. Eduardo Rossi coming in. Thanks.
Class act in the hobby. What about me? What about me?
Maybe it's just understood.
In the podcasting industry, I'm a class act.
Yep. That would be correct. So then Paul and I went to, oh man.
Well, you're getting compliments left and right here. He's a god. So, you're a god.
A god, not the god. What movie was that? Was that Ghostbusters? Bill Murray said that.
I think you're right. God, so I haven't Paul seen that movie since it came out.
Oh, it's
great. I should revisit that.
It's a great movie. Paul and I went to the Force Race, which is Florida's state level series for 8-scale buggy racing. Had the race up at Southside in Lake City. So Paul and I cruised up there. We didn't do any racing ourselves. We just kind of wanted to set up and just kind of get away to the track and hang out with the guys and watch some racing. And we were watching the weather. We were watching the heat index. it was like, okay, it's time for a drink run. Okay, it's time. Let's go check into the hotel now. Let's get the AC running, because it was brutally hot out there. So, yeah, so we went out there the Force Race. And Lake City, that's the track where they had the Roar Nationals a couple, I guess maybe 2 years ago.
Wait, where was this at?
Southside Raceway, which is in Lake City, Florida.
Oh, okay.
It's in a park. It's very like Tampa Lake Park-esque in a way, I guess. But I like it. I like going there. And they hadn't raced in 4 months. They hadn't raced in 4 months at that track. So it took Lance McDonald put in a lot of work along with some of their track crew there, getting it ready to run. And it's hard to get started and motivated in this time of the year. And I think everybody was a little feisty at first, I think. But when the race settled in and the track got groomed up even more, it turned out to be a good race. And it started raining at the end of the second round of qualifying. And so Paul and I, we kind of packed our stuff up, and Lee Setzer and Julian Olivares, and they kind of they stayed around, ran the mains. Lee Setzer ended up winning both Nitro Buggy and E-Buggy, the pro classes. We had a lot of success there. And Julian was really kind of owning the Nitro main. He was really running a fantastic race, probably should have won, and just had a problem at a ghost flame out in 8 scale. He just, sometimes you never can explain it. And he flamed out. Lee went to the lead, and I think Julian got back to third, but yeah, it was disappointing for him, but good win for Lee. And then E-Buggy, I think, went down in Lee's favor. He's been doing a lot of winning in Florida. I think over the years, in this area, there's been a lot of really good racers that have won a lot of races. And, you think of like J.R. Mitch and then Paul Wynn, myself, Damon Borkowitz, when he was running a lot, he was starting to win quite a bit. Billy Easton lives here, but he's not really from here. But when he races, he's always one of the fastest guys. Now we got Lee and Julian, who they're really starting to take over, in this area, and they're becoming really tough to beat in 10 scale and in 8 scale. And they're also the right age. I want to say they're 20.
I don't like them already. I'm becoming that bitter old man.
Stay off my lawn. What is it? Something like
that. Yeah, get off my yard. I see these Julian, young kids. I'm getting all mad at them.
Julian, to be honest, I can't remember what tire he was on in the main. Maybe he ran Stalkers. He might have ran Stalkers. I know Lee ran Cosmos in the main. I know that.
Paul Wynn saying Green Cosmos Stalkers. Green.
So there you go, yeah. So I thought he ran Stalkers, and then Lee ran the Cosmos. Which is good.
And Zachary, we'll get to that question.
So yeah, we've been kind of bumping around. We've been doing a lot of Florida racing between the Super Cups, the Four Series. The guys up in Georgia have had some killer races on the SOS. They got a series there called SOS. They had a fantastic turnout a couple weeks ago. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good race, and just to really have that many people out there. Paul and I were talking about it. We're like, everyone's always talking about getting more people involved in RC and doing this and that. And where I'm out there looking at everybody racing, and I'm thinking, I'm really happy with all the people that we have that do it and are committed to it, because you have to be so committed to go out there. I mean, you're in Florida in the summer in July.
And brutal.
It is brutal out there. It's so brutal. And guys are just loving it. They can't wait to get on the track. They can't wait to race. And you have to be hardcore. You have to be a diehard to really have that much commitment.
And a little bit of crazy.
Yeah. Then you got to be a little bit crazy. And those are our guys. And not everybody's prepared to do that. Not everyone, they might, watch a video on YouTube and think it's cool or whatever. But you put them out there with the equipment in the middle of the summer in Florida and say, hey, we're having fun, they're probably like, I don't know. And you got to be dedicated, and you got to love the cars and the wrenching, and then the people. You got to kind of get involved with the people, and there's a little bit of fun that goes on with that, seeing guys, and so it's a good race. The Force. We'll check that off the list.
Yeah, we got some random questions in here also. I'll put those up a little bit later.
And then Sunday, that Sunday after the Force race, we went up. Allison and I went up and visited the RCDRL drag racing, which is one of the leagues. RCDRL, it's called, and they had their very first Florida race at Don Garlett's Drag Racing Museum in Ocala. And AJ raced out there along with Dustin Spallone and many other guys that we know from off-road or on-road racing. And it's actually really cool. When I went out there, at first you're kind of like, do I know some of these people? And then you start seeing people you recognize that raced before. I had a guy say, hey, I raced with you at Gore back in the 90s in Orlando. Wow. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Damn. And I know as soon as Paul got out there, he came out there. And Paul gets out there and everybody knows him from an on-road race or an off-road race. And so you see these, we have a lot of RC guys over the years, and they kind of grab it, you know, you shift in your priorities or what you think it's fun at the time. And they're like, you know, at some time they're running off-road, sometimes they're running on-road, then they're drag racing, then they're racing oval or dirt oval. And so you start to see similar people. But the drag race was good. They had 82 entries for the drag race. Writing that down. 82 entries for the very first RCDRL out there at Garlett's Museum. So I thought that was good. They had many classes that I was like blown away at the speed. They had top fuel. They had funny car. Pro something.
You're still learning all the drag.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, I've seen them all, but, you know, we're following the Street Eliminator trend, but, you know, we're out there supporting that. But you start to see these other ones, and right away, you're just like, man, this one's cool too. So, you know what? The more I go to this stuff, whether it's dirt oval, whether it's monster trucks, drag racing, you can kind of fall in love with any of these classes. And AJ has kind of had that happen a little bit. You know, he raced a little oval, he kind of fell in love with that. Then it's all of a sudden he's drag racing, he's loving that. So it's like these guys are just raceaholics. So it's like you give them a car and you're just telling them what to do with it, and they're like, I love this pro stock. Yeah. And then they had a Street Eliminator class, but then they also had, I think, Pro Street, and he can confirm, but on the RCDRL, they had Pro Street, which is the one AJ raced in. It was cool. So it took him a while to adjust to the track, and you know what's different about some of these? Look at this. He's finishing my third drag car. It's like, yeah, what's cool about some of this is the pro stock classes and like the top fuel, they run foam tires. So they're like truing a, you know, that's like full, like old school, like,
yeah, I mean, people got the tire truer out.
Yeah. Yeah. The tire truer, you shave them down. They get these big tires that look like this, you know, they're like this big, but, and then they true them down to what they need. And then they goop them up, and they got, they run those things, and there's no, like, I noticed with those cars, there's no, like, I'm going to feel this thing out on the starting line and roll into the throttle and see if it hooks up and goes. They just bury the trigger. And if it doesn't hook up, it's a disaster. And if it hooks up, it's amazing. So, and cause you can't, like, one of the guys in the, I think the top fuel or the drag, he did 110 miles an hour on one of his passes, and the pro stock guys, I mean, Mike Ray, who's from Ocala, he was doing 102, 105 miles an hour with his pro stock. And when you're doing that in 132 feet, you don't just ease into the throttle at the line. Like, you just bury it and the thing takes off like a missile and you just hope it's going straight. Like,
pray for the best.
It's not. Oh yeah. It's nuts. Like, you're sitting there and I'm like, oh, these guys are coming up. I'm going to get in behind the cars. I'm not getting on the other side of the track. Like, I'm getting behind where the drivers are.
Right. Yeah.
Like, when I did the videos, I was like, when AJ and them ran, I'm like, oh, I'll film this from anywhere. I'm not scared of the street eliminators. Which is because they're kind of big and bulky, and it's like, they're not super fast. But those cars, especially the top fuel, like, it looks like you're racing like a sword, you know, like, because it's so long and it's just, you know, it's shaped like this in the front. It looks like you put one of those, you know, one of those big swords down and it just takes off and
it goes right through somebody.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's seriously, they're fast. It's impressive. So they gave Don Garlitz an award for allowing him to have a race and a race series out there. So that was pretty neat. I guess he came out. He lives there. Guy's 82 years old, I think they said. And That's his museum property. And he's trying to attempt a record for an electric drag, an electric dragster. Yeah, there it is. 132 feet in 1.2 seconds. So Don Garlitz is attempting a record right now for an electric real drag car. And he had to go, they were telling us that he had to go back up to Gainesville where they have the Gator Nationals and reapply for his drag racing license. So, 82 years old, he had to go make a pass. And I want to say he went like 150 or 160 with his electric dragster and he got his license again.
Wow.
So,
jeez.
Talk about guys that have no fear, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Over the years, it's just like, once you just get, I guess you get used to doing something, becomes normal to you. And no matter what age, you feel good about doing it. So yeah, Don Garlitz, RCDRL, chop it up.
All right. I'll mark that down, Corey. I got people messaging me with names, so I'll put that to the list. Chop it up. Not bad, Corey. It's a lot. Hey, it's better than some of them that I got, but thanks for sending them in, though. I appreciate it. You got to come up with a name.
As good as Bluestone. So just to recap on our entries here, we had 100, I want to say it was 160-ish entries at that off-road shootout there in Bakersfield. At the Force race, the one Paul and I went to, there was 150 entries out there, which was good. So the racing is out there, even though we're kind of dodging this pandemic stuff a little, and we're going in and out of, you either have to wear a mask or you don't.
good one, John. He's right.
And, oh man,
this is a little different going live.
Getting locked up over here.
Yeah, that and normally when we're recording, we'll stop, take a break, go do something, come back. We got to go straight through.
Hammer through it.
You get disruptions.
All right. So, a couple other things I was going to mention, because when you were going through what we talked about on the last podcast, I was like, well, I mentioned some products on there. So I was like, well, I might as well do that now. We got, we released the aluminum ride height gate, or I'm sorry, the camber gauge, the RM squared, which is the Mayfield brand that we have.
Yeah.
A lot of people think it's RM2, but it's actually RM squared because it's, stands for Ryan Mayfield Momentum.
Gotcha.
Is actually what the name is, because when I was working on this, my idea was when I watch him drive and I watch him race, that's how I kind of, I feel like he's always has this insane amount of momentum going, and it's like, whether he's on the line of the track, off the line, he's just always keeping up the momentum. So anyway, Ryan Mayfield momentum, this aluminum camber gauge, and we made it longer because the one we sell, the J Concepts one, is really made for 10th scale. It's kind of like this, you know, and it has this arm on it. And we made the 8 scale one taller, so you can use it for 8 scale. So it was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And we made it red, made it anodized red, which somebody commented somewhere, Matt Francis red, which...
Yeah, that's what I thought of right away when I saw it.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when Matt had some Trinity parts back in the day, his were red, Kinwald's were blue.
Yeah, you mean when I was delivering those and he was like, what are these?
What is this?
Yeah, put them on your car. Don't ask questions.
Yeah, there was a time that was the big thing to have.
So you said so it's momentum.
Yeah, right. Ryan Mayfield momentum.
Violence, speed, momentum. That's Dr. Disrespect.
But oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
It's funny, though, that he has momentum in it, and you also think momentum. Mayfield, and yeah. If we could have used that, it would have been great for Mayfield. Violence, speed, momentum. We can't do it, though.
Okay.
Anyway.
So the other thing we released, that's that regulator chassis kit for the Clodbuster, and the steering kit. It was pretty cool. We kind of put a lot of work into that during, pandemic times, and we kind of went overboard with some of the things we did because we felt like, you know, we want to make a nice kit box. We want to make nice instructions. We wanted to fully model the vehicle into the computer, and just did a lot of extras that we had time because I was in town, no races going on. We kind of were able to take things to a little additional level. So that was fun. Got that out, and, kind of a fun project, and it's working well.
So who came up with the name?
Regular. I think I did.
Okay.
That was my name. Sometimes I come up with these names while I'm typing it into Excel. I'll give it a part number, and then I get to the next line where you have to have a name, and then I start typing something.
Oh.
Because I'm like, well, I need a placeholder here, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, not too bad. Might okay. stick.
I do like the box for the regulator. Looks good.
Thanks. Yeah, we worked on that. One of our guys, Morris, who was working hard on that graphic design, and we thought we messed it up one time. That was a bummer. We thought we made the box too small at one point.
Mm.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of little things you can get into with this that you don't really realize. And you make a cool truck and then make the box too small to fit. So, but it ended up working out, but it was funny. You're making sure all this other stuff is perfect. And then you're like, wait a second, does this fit in the box? Then you're like, oh, okay.
Dope.
People asking us about releasing stuff for TLR cars. Oh, there's my pen. You got, we released some new turnbuckles for them, the fin style turnbuckles, which we've had for a while for a lot of cars over the years. But these are the titanium, the colored black, look super trick. They're the 3.5 millimeter, which is what the TLR cars are. So we got the 22X4 covered, which is a new four wheel. Regulators mount up. See, there you go.
Justin Chubert, watch this. You ready, Jubert? Bills Mafia. I like the Bills Mafia. I want to get up there one time and go through a table.
For the 22 5.0, we got the turnbuckles for it. Then we got a B6, T6, and SC6 servo horn. People have been asking of those for a while. Aluminum, pretty cool. Trick, chamfered, highlighted.
Trick.
Speed Shop t-shirt. We had this Morris design this thing a long time ago. Speed Shop, he was pushing the Speed Shop shirt on me, and I was just like, you know, I don't know. And finally we got into drag racing, and one day Allison's like, do you think we should have a t-shirt for some drag racing stuff? And I'm like, we have the perfect shirt for this.
Yeah.
The Speed Shop. So we got our Speed Shop shirt, and now that's out there, and we'll check that off the list. So that's my sales pitch at the moment. We don't really do a lot of sales pitches, but that was one.
Here's a question for you, Jason. Mm-hmm.
Is a GNX body made to just drop right on an SC chassis with stock SC spec arms? It's very close. That body's almost, I want to say it's right close to 12 inches wide. So it's close. We actually haven't done that though. We've only put it on the buggy arm cars, but we made it a little wider on purpose so that people could run a wider car if they wanted. It's something that we really need to make sure on that body that it fits the longer arms. But if you put drag racing wheels and tires on it with the longer arms, I believe that it does drop right on there. This is kind of a back and forth thing, because when we started making these bodies, we made them to a width that we thought was going to be the right width, which was the buggy length arms. So we made our first couple bodies to that width. Then people were like, hey, I don't want it to be that narrow because I want to run it wide. I don't want to have to change my suspension to run it wide. So then we started making them wider. And then people are like, why did you make it so wide? Mm. We're like, well, it's because it fits the car with the longer arms. And they're like, so what we're in is we're in a time period where the class is just, it's so volatile in what's going on. Like, you know, every week there's some guy with a new graphite kit car on the internet. And then there's, you know, running different arms. So then there's the associated car now that's out that goes with the buggy width arms. And I think what we're going to see is gravitating more towards that width car, because that's going to become the standard, I think. But the thing, there's two different sides to this whole thing. There's the guys that are the diehard racers that are going to build a purpose-built drag car. And then there's the guys that are bashers that want to do some drag racing. They're going to take what they have and try to just put wheels and tires and a body on it and have a drag car. So those are the guys that have the wide cars. And then the guys that have the little more specific vehicles are the ones with the buggy stuff. So, and then it's like you can't leave out either side, because then one is mad over the other. So that's why this transition or this what's going on is so critical to watch and pay attention, because it's rapidly changing. And then who's the next car that's going to come out? Now Associated is, as we talked about earlier, they're third release into the drag cars. They had the the orange one, the green one, and then they've got this kit now. So they're three in, and there hasn't been a competitor yet that has a full car out of the box like this at that price point. So we're waiting to see, is Traxxas going to jump in it? They have all the equipment to do it, of course. And then Losi could jump in it if they wanted to. There's others that have race platforms, the X-Rays, the Serpents. All these guys have buggies, trucks, short courses that they can convert to these cars. So I predict by the end of the year, almost all these companies will have them. At least two of them will have good ones. And so, yeah, that's right. The decals are on the Speed Shop or on a lot of the decal sheets. That's where it kind of started. Seltzer
break, guys. I can't take those long breaks like we, you know, be like, hey, I'll be right back. Come back 15 minutes later, pick up recording again. What's that? Seltzer?
It's just regular water.
No.
But it goes see-through.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
So what's next? Well, we got any questions here?
Yeah, we got one here from Zachary for you.
Okay. If the answer doesn't date from here, so could you briefly explain diff oil tuning? You would want a diff full of fluid as opposed to any other situations. You want to fill it to what the recommended factory instructions say to fill it. I believe they say when you build the diff and you set the gears in there, a lot of people say they dry build these diffs first to see that they're functioning correctly. And then you put fluid in there to the recommended height, and you always want to fill the diff up. Whatever the recommended height is, you fill it up. And if you want to change how the diff feels, then you change the viscosity of the fluid. So, you know, whether you run 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, or you run 200,000, you always want to keep it the same amount of fluid. You just want to change the viscosity. So, so that's that. Doesn't even take the rest of the show. That was an easy one.
Yeah. I was prepared for a long one.
Some guy will come in and be like, let's talk about sponsorships. Oh gosh, here we go. Episode 216.
John Bolton, think Traxxas will re-release the Funny Car and Drag Tree?
I don't think so. I don't think they'll re-release the Funny Car. I think what they'll do is I think they'll make this street eliminator. And I think that they'll probably come back. I don't know about the drag tree. They might re-release it. It'd be a good idea. I mean, that's what, you know, we had like one or two of them here. Traxxas actually gave them to us for one of our events a long time ago. And gave one of them to AJ. He's been using it to tune. So it's been really helpful. I also see, and this is going to happen, there's people out there that are making their own stuff. I see guys making the PVC things everywhere, and they got like, you know, people are going to start selling timing stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's nothing like it all being working alongside of your phone or an application that you can check all these stats. So Paul's saying that you can, with the touring car guys, they actually change the amount that's in the diff. So the touring car guys are just nuts, though. They are. They're never happy with the performance of the car, I've noticed. That's where all the tuning and the over-tuning starts, is in touring car. All the adjustments that they're getting in on-road and touring car, you might as well write down whatever the adjustments are now, because it's coming to off-road. At some point, it'll be off-road adjustment.
Oh, man.
Because over the years, the things that people talk about now in off-road is stuff that they talked about in on-road 10 years ago. So it's coming. My lap's timing, I don't know exactly how they would do drag racing, but maybe they do. I mean, maybe that's the system. What Fred has, because Fred, when he ran the monster truck events, he has a Race America timing tree that gives you all the stats. So you can set up the timing tree, and, you know, it gives you the pro tree, you know, where the lights come down. And so with his system, you get reaction time and, you know, your actual time, mile per hour too, I think. So he has the ability to get all that with the Race America software, which I was under the impression that's what they used in drag racing. I'm sure it's a lot more techie now, but Fred has that system. And like tire warmers. I mean, that has been out. When was those Trinity ones? Gotti, the Trinity tire warmers?
99, I believe.
Yeah. So we had them a couple years ago, so about 17, 18 years. So anything you've seen in touring car will be coming to dirt eventually.
Took a lot of heat for that, the tire warmers.
Yeah. It seems like no matter when you release them.
Heat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Get that heat. I still haven't used tire warmers. I don't think I've used them on my off-road car yet. I think I used them on my on-road car. I think I even had the Trinity ones.
Oh, they do? You guys aren't, I guess, depends on the weather and stuff too, right? Certainly in the winter. Indoors, well, I don't know. When are you using them?
Well, off-road, they've been using them indoors.
Let me just put it this way. Is Mayfield using them?
He has used them before.
Is he using them now? Is Spencer using them?
Spencer uses them.
Okay. Well, then you got to use them. That's all. I would just look and see what those guys are doing. And if they're doing it, then you use them. Simple as that. Right?
Of course, they have them.
But they have
used them, but not every time.
Right. When do you use them?
They were using them at some of the indoor race events where you're running slicks. You never run them with treads, I don't think. They've never used them with treads, but when you transition to either low tread or slick tires indoors is usually when they're using them. Yeah, that's what people do.
How much knowledge is that, Danny? Is it a lot of knowledge that you have there?
What did Danny put a picture up that maybe it was the body he got? I had the like, and then I put a GIF in there too. I was feeling excited. I put a GIF in there.
Use them when the first guy gets them out. It's like the honor system. He's right. There you go. I don't know. I just, if those guys are using them, you got to have them in your toolbox then.
You know what? Those ones that Much More makes are really nice too for off-road. I haven't had any. But if I've got them, I get those Much More ones. They're really cool. It has a power supply and you can adjust. They're cool.
All right. John Bolton and Midwest Mod Bodies coming, building an oval car.
Not yet. That'll definitely be one of the last ones because it's a big... this thing is just, that's a big monster of a project, having all those panels, and part body, part panels. Jimmy Simmons.
Any new carpet off-road tires coming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's always something coming next. But yeah, especially for carpet. There's no time frame. Still going to be a little while, but it's coming.
Rob Sturgill. Good friend of the show. Will you be developing the Ghost Pin as the other company dud?
I don't really know why that needs to be done, to be honest. We had our Bro Codes tire, which was a somewhat broken in tire. It wasn't a Ghost Pin, but it was broken in already, and oh, this was a while ago, but what I don't understand is if you're going to have a ghost, this has been done twice already, but if you're going to have a ghost pin tire, I don't understand really why you'd need it, because within like a run and a half, it's going to be slick in the middle anyway. So I don't really get it, to be honest. I mean, I can see having it. You know, you could basically take ellipses and cut 2/3 of the tread off or more and just have this ghost thing, but I don't really understand really what the deal with that is. I mean maybe it's something that we have to have, but I feel like when you take our tires now, the ellipse, and you run them a little bit, and you break them in, they become what you want. So I don't really know why, even if you have a brand new tire that's a ghost pin, I don't really know why you're still going to run it and break it in and drive it. So all we're talking about the differences is a couple runs on the track. I haven't really seen something like that. Yeah, Paul said the bar flies were kind of a ghost pin. Those things were, I want to say they were, if we did it in inches, they were, I think I don't know if you can see this. That was the height of the bar flies. 0.0225. That's pretty much a ghost pin. You know what? And there was ghost pins made in 1999 too. Back in the day, I was involved in that, and there were some ghost pins back then, and it didn't work then. Guys still took taper pins, was the hot tire back then, and they would break them in and run them. So I don't know. I don't know if we're going to need that. If we do, I mean, it's easy enough to do. All it costs is money.
Justin Doyle says guys complain about buying tires and sanding them down to be fast. Now they're going to buy a ghost pin that they're still paying for, but don't last.
Yeah. I mean, Justin is, you know, that's exactly what he's saying. I think that the last few things we've talked about is the reason why 10 scale off-road racing, the growth has been stunted, is because we've gotten back to running. We went through a cycle, and because we started running slicks in the late 90s, we started running slicks and it killed 10 scale buggy racing. Then we kind of got back going again, the B4 generation and all that type of stuff. We started racing more dirt again, and tires were, and now we're getting closer and closer. I'd say almost every race we ran, I mean, this is another thing, is almost every race we ran last year, we ran slicks on 10 scale. Even the races I ran, we were running slicks. And I think that I think it hurts the class. I think if we could figure out a way somehow to make the tracks or the dirt where you didn't run that, I think it would be more attractive. But I think that these, you know, Justin's kind of doing something right now. He's actually getting out of 10 scale and running 8 scale, probably more because of location of tracks being more 8 scale for him. But now he's getting back into running treaded tires again in 8 scale, and now he's experiencing this a little bit differently. Whereas in 10 scale, I noticed, you know, we were at similar races, you're running almost no tread or slicks, and now he's running 8 scale, he's seeing that, you know, these different treads and how the compounds affect things. And I just seem to think that every time in 10 scale off-road that we start to get to where we're almost running no tread and running slicks, the entries, to me, always seem to decline. It seems like if we had more 10 scale friendly backyard 10 scale tracks and those type of tires and conditions, I think the turnouts would be better. I think the cycle in racing is coming back to 8 scale right now because of most of the 10 scale racing is done with slicks. If you and carpet is a whole another animal, but yeah, it's tough. But I think that's just my general opinion. Yeah, I mean, he's saying that the off-road tire game, yeah, and it is. And the more that people know about it, the worse it is. Carpet is easy as long as you're not saucing. If they could keep tire sauce out of carpet off-road racing, I think it would help. But that's starting to creep in too.
Justin Doyle, used to hate 8-scale so bad. Now that I'm doing it, totally understand why people like it. Outdoors, no prep, camping atmosphere, and racing's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're seeing that a lot. So, you know, really all you really would do is all these tracks they built for 8-scale. If you had 10-scale tracks that you built smaller and essentially ran a similar condition, I think people would start getting back out to doing it. They're getting ran off with a new car every year and tires with no tread. That's just my opinion.
Danny Mack says, remember my foam gate days?
I don't really remember that. Do you remember that?
I don't remember. I just remember Deflate Gate, Spy Gate,
Watergate. You know, and this is where things get interesting, because I think the surface thing is so hard, because
go back to the old days.
Well, it's easy to say the old days and say, oh, I liked racing on loamy dirt, but then when you do it and everyone's cars get really, really dirty, they don't like that either. So it's like, you know, Paul talks about, this was several years ago, but there's a track we liked going to called Shiverville, and they decided that one race they were going to run it wet and loamy, which they would usually run it. They would usually run it dirty, but it would be smooth, and there wasn't like a lot of like loam on the cars. Well, anyway, they intentionally started watering this track, and the guys were really upset at how dirty their cars got. So they didn't really realize that part until they started running, and they were like, oh man, now we got to worry about all this. So,
Danny Mack got banned. You Patriots fan, Danny?
Foam gate. That's what's hard about off-road racing is the surface. I think what's good for turning, what's good for race turnouts is a little different than what's good for big races. Big races, it's good to have a consistent track, have good traction, and you just want to know that when you get out there, when you get out there, you want to know that you're on the same equal track conditions as the other guy. That's the problem with outdoor dirt racing is, the conditions of the track vary so much. 8-scale, they get away with it more than they do in 10-scale. And that's where, in 8-scale, they get away with, they get away with murder out there. They can do anything to these tracks, and they get bumpier, they get looser, they get higher traction, and they can make it through rounds of qualifying with people not getting too ornery about the unfair level of track here and there. In 10-scale, if the track is good, I mean, it changes between qualifiers in Florida. If you're racing outside, we'll race Coral Springs this weekend, and mm-hmm. I mean, depending on the weather, how good it is. If you're out there running and the sun comes out, your track's faster than when the sun goes behind the clouds. So that's what people, and that can happen between qualifiers, and the track gets better the longer you run. So there's a whole host of things that happen in 10-scale racing that are difficult running on these surfaces. But that's why a consistent, a little grippier track works better for big races outdoors, because you can keep that consistent factor a little more into a window. When you like try to just let the track start off one way and gradually move to another, there's huge swings in the speed of the track. And that we're not talking about, like, if we ran a race in Coral Springs, and I'm using that as an example because we're going there. If you run the morning qualifier in round one and you TQ that round and the sun is out, the weather's getting better, and they run by the second round, it can be a lap difference between what you ran in the first round and what you run in the second round. The track is a lap faster. So you can see in that time span how much the track is changing. And by the time you get a whole nother round of qualifying through, your first round time is not nowhere near good enough. It's a lap difference. And, you know, I tell the story sometimes, and this is going back to in the 90s, but I was running the Winter Champs back then, and the track got fast. And before the fastest round of qualifying, I was fifth qualifier in two-wheel mod. Well, in the fast round of qualifying, I popped off a ball cup, and I was in the E main. So I went from being fifth qualifier, and I broke in the fast round of qualifying. I went to the E main. That's how much difference the track was in speed. So
you say P main?
E.
E, okay.
I didn't drop all the way to the P.
Billy says 8 scales are beast. Can run them anywhere. 10 scale tends to be way more sensitive.
Yeah, and I mean it's right. That's why people like it, because you can be an animal with it. You can drive over pipes, you can drive over other cars, you can, you know, drive in the loose stuff, you can drive off of bad jumps, and they're four-wheel drive, and that's why people like them. And it makes sense.
I love watching 8 scale.
Yeah, me too. I just think about, I mean, I'm getting pictures from Ronnie from the JBRL, and I think, man, like, I want to watch these guys this weekend. I mean, is anybody going to run a live camera? You know, it's because it is a blast to watch. I love racing two-wheel buggy. That's my favorite class. But going to watch a good nitro race is definitely very neat.
I love the strategy.
You have to drive. To me, you have to drive a two-wheel buggy to appreciate the guys that are really good at it. And like, you watch Spencer Rivkin win the Worlds at Hootie Arena. And I think on video or being there, it's not that impressive unless you know what it feels like to drive the car. 8 scales, to me, it seems like they're more impressive, and you don't have to have a lot of familiarity with how it works. So
drivers are too much prima donnas today. Been running outdoor loose tracks, but it's not set up for most racers' cars in the area. It's calling you out, Jason.
Yes.
Yeah, he called you a prima donna.
Oh no, I don't think he is. I have to get a picture of what I think is the ideal track condition. It's not as dirty and loamy as people say, I think.
Well, just how about some ruts? That would be nice.
People say bring back real dirt and all this type of stuff, which is fine. But there is a look. There's a certain look to the track that it has when it has the traction. It has drivability. You have dirt on your tires, and the cars work well. And it's not really dirty. There is a happy spot, and the track looks a certain way when it's like that. And I'll bring up some pictures. I'll find my what is it? What is it called when the Jess, right? The Three Bears thing. There's a Just Right track condition that kind of has the checks off all the boxes. I'm racing on dirt. Check. Yeah. I got a little dirt on my car. Check. I got pin tires. Check. Like, car's good to drive, but not just wide open everywhere. Check. You know, like, you can checks all the boxes.
Yeah, John, I know you weren't calling Jason. I was just kidding around. Jason. Robert says, Jason's got skills to make the mills.
What did I say? The skills are diminishing, though.
Uh-oh. Age.
When you don't keep them sharp, when you don't keep them sharp, it's hard to pull that out of your pocket.
Okay.
But I don't know. We'll see what we can do. Got a race this weekend, I guess.
John Hobbyhaven. I don't know, man. I just love that track. You got the hobby shop, the store right there, and you can look out, and the track is right there.
That's like the quintessential track and hobby shop.
Yeah, right? It's awesome. I love it.
Both at the same time.
Absolutely. Man, if I had that in my area, I'd be racing and smashing into the barriers and stuff like that. Chris Pace, Savannah, Georgia, back in the day. Step pins and car was clean.
Yeah, he's got it about right. I mean, that was one of the conditions where I remember driving in Savannah, Georgia, and I remember when the track was really, really good there, and I remember shaking because I was trying to drive the car so hard, you know, just getting into the turns, trying to get through the turns, and like I wasn't shaking because I was nervous. I was shaking because I'm like trying to make the car go faster because it has so much, you had a lot of control, a lot of drivability, and you're like, I need to push this thing even more. And that's how Savannah was back then. That was a place we would go to, and we just loved it. There's actually a race coming up there, and if it's open, Paul and I might go to a race there.
The more you race, the skills stay fresh. But I'm wondering, yeah, though, as you age, will it matter? Like, if you raced every day and say you're 50, you think you'd be competing with these young kids?
I just don't know.
I mean, you're almost there, right? What are you now, 49?
No.
I'm trying to make you older than you are.
43.
Ah, you suck.
I don't know. It's unproven. The people that are going to show us is Mayfield, Cavallari, and Tebow. They're going to show us how long and how far you can take it, because they're all 33 years old. I'm 43. And they are going to show us how long you can do this. And they're already doing it longer than I thought. They're already more competitive and better than I thought that they would be at that age.
John says he's 55 and it matters. John's out there trying his best, see. He's doing what he can do. He's trying to stay on top of his game, but he realizes he's 55.
It's also an excuse, right?
I'm busting your job.
It's also a really good excuse, and I think
I don't know about that.
I think sometimes people will use it as an excuse, and it's hard not to. You know, I've said it to Lee and guys that we race with, you know, using it as an excuse. And I will say this, Rick Howard is an amazing driver still for his age. Paul, obviously he's doing well too. Paul's not as old as Rick is, but, Rick Howard with a touring car is still a badass. And, I think he's well into his 50s. And there is a certain amount. I'll compare this to if you have had the skill and you've had the talent, if you have it, I think you can carry it on for quite a while. And it's like when Grant Hill was in the NBA, I kind of think about this, where when he came in to the NBA and he was just out of college, it was young, and he was like almost averaging a triple double. He was like a really great player, and he had all these special skills and talents. He had it, right? He had the ability to be, you know, he had the ability to be just amazing. And then he got hurt. He went to Orlando. He got this problem with his ankle and his foot. And it was just, what did he have, like 6 surgeries or something on it?
Yeah, I think
so. He lost the whole prime of his career to this injuries. He ended up barely playing for Orlando. And he got traded to Phoenix. And then he was a really good, solid player. But he lost the whole prime of his career. He lost the whole prime of his career to this injury. But what I was noticing is he still had something that the other guys did not. he was still a very good player, and he was almost, you know, he was playing into his late 30s? I think it was his late 30s.
Yeah.
He still had something that other people did not, and he was keeping him in the game because I think he had more than most people do to begin with. So if you have more than most people do to begin with, I think you can extend it longer. And that might be what we're seeing with some people in like the Mayfields and all these guys. I mean, these guys are going to be fast when they're 50 years old. I mean, you watch Richard Saxton race. He's still awesome. I mean, he rips on himself and says, I'm going to go run the old fart class. And all, but you go watch him drive and you're like, he's getting around pretty good. You know, he's not as fast as some of these other guys.
Sturgill, track time is important. That being said, my trigger finger isn't as fast as Dustin Evans given the same track time. 49, things just move slower. Okay.
But that's what I always kind of wonder too, is it's like, so you got this part, right? You know, you pull the trigger and then you got your steering, right? So like, how much faster can you go like than this? You know what I mean? Like, is it like, can you actually, is like Dustin Evans, like, can he do this faster? I don't think so.
It's the whole eye
cord. Yeah. There's a coordination part of it. There is something about the coordination between, you know, the steering, the throttle, and watching what you're doing. There is a correlation there. And it's turning, it's doing it at the right time, right? It's the timing of it. So it's hard to figure out. I've never really.
I can tell you what.
To be honest, when I drive a car, I drive an RC car now, I'm actually, there's times when I kind of, it's been a long time since I've driven or something, and I'll go up and I'll start driving and I'll be like, do I remember how to do this? And I'll get, and I'll start driving and I'm like, oh, I'm better at this than I thought I would be.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting. It's hard. Fast twitch muscle fibers.
I've talked about this.
You know what he's saying is, I watched on YouTube one day, and there is a time, but the thing I was watching on YouTube was, it was a basketball game with like retired players or guys that were, Dr. J was in it anyway. It was in Rutger Park in New York.
Okay.
And Dr. J in this video. I played there. Really?
On the video game. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
NBA.
So Dr. J in this video, he's old. Like, he's like, for a basketball player, he's like in his late 50s, it looks like, in this video. And he's still very good. Like, he's, you know, he's still got all the big hand stuff where he's can do whatever he wants with the ball. He can make a shot. He's inside. He's still like taller than everybody. But what like Rob's talking about, you could see when he's running and trying to do like a move, it's not just like a no-brainer anymore. Like, there's, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's like, you know, there's almost like a little bit more of a checklist in terms of.
It looks like he's thinking about it as he's running.
Yeah. Like, he's like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and make left, my move. And,
right.
Yeah.
Left.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to make the move. And whereas when you watch the highlights of these guys in their prime, it's just action nonstop. But he still has a lot of the gifts and things that, and you could see he was still the best player on the court. With everybody else, but yeah, it's cool, but I know exactly what he's saying.
And I talked to you about this. What if you took an athlete, you know where I'm going, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you draft them, let's say you draft them to the Lakers, let's just say, and you just put them on the shelf for 10 years.
So you drafted him when he was 20.
I draft him when he's 20 and I introduce him when he's 30. Yeah. Will I, huh?
He's not going to be as good.
I know. You don't think, like, if you, you know, you're saving all that mileage on the legs. You don't think if you just put them on the shelf for 10 years and you know, obviously you got to train and stuff still and keep yourself in shape, but you're avoiding all, you know, 10 years worth of games running up and down the court. Don't you think that if you come in at your 30, you could maybe play into your 50s then?
What I think, yeah, it might move the window a little bit. It might move the window because now you're not going to, maybe.
But you still think that everything deteriorates. Obviously, your eye and hand coordination will probably deteriorate with age no matter what, I guess. Mm-hmm. But don't you think you'll still have legs in your 50s then?
I don't know. I think you're not going to be as good.
We should try.
The problem is, well, the issue is you don't know how good the guy is to begin with.
Well, let's say I draft him. I already know he's awesome. You know, I'm drafting Kobe Bryant.
But he never played in the game in the NBA, right? So what you need is you need like a couple years in the NBA to get that to get something to go by, and then it's like boom, you go in the cryogenic chamber. Right. Put him in the chamber for 10 years and then you bring him back out and say, okay, let's see what you got. And I think there is some preserving because you're not going to have the wear and tear. But it's like you hear about these guys that get injured at home. Oh, I tripped over my step and I'm out for 6 months. You know, like, so you could still get injured. Not playing I do think you would lose something.
Yeah.
But what might not be as noticeable is maybe the wear and tear.
Yeah. I've had this discussion with Jason in our group chat. Just remember, I just off the wall question and we got into a big discussion about it. And it's funny, it's being brought up today. So, Ryan says, don't forget about Gene Heckerson in his 40s and still giving the young, fast regional guys a tough time. You'd love to see that. The guys in their 40s giving these young ones. That's not really true, actually. Huh?
That's not really true.
Uh-oh.
He races the over 40 class, and he beats the other guys in the over 40 class. But
so his times are comparable to the young ones, you're saying?
No.
Oh, it's not?
He's a good driver, and he's in his 40s. But he's racing the over 40 class. To me, when you compare him against the fastest guys in the other class, he's not really comparable. But
why do guys race the over 40 class? Why not just stick with the young guys?
Do we want to go into this now?
All right, I guess not. It's 8:30.
No, I mean, no, it's no. I know exactly what Ryan's saying. I think. But he has always been a good driver. Gene has always been a good driver and a good racer. But I think his actual speed just isn't with the Lees and the Julians. And I'm forgetting a couple of the other kids. But he's not as fast as those guys.
But isn't the 40 over 40 class just like, why have it? Just have everybody race as one. No,
I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. what it is it just, it's another opportunity to win. Okay. And people like racing in things that they have a chance to win. And there's a over 40 e-buggy class. There's a over 40 nitro buggy class, and people love racing those classes, and they start developing like these rivalries. And that's what I've seen in the Force races is I start seeing the rivalries kind of between the guys that are in that class. So like at our races, we got like the Dave Duncans, Carl Debo, Kari Brown, you know, Gene races nitro, and and some of the others, and they start to get a rivalry with each other. And now it becomes like a little circle of their own group of racers. And I think that it gives them hope and energy and a purpose to go to the next race and try to beat and do well in that class again. And it is a different way to look at it, but if you grouped them all together and you just said, oh, there's only going to be nitro buggy and however you want to break it down, I think these guys wouldn't be as happy in the, you know, on a state level being in the bottom of the B main or the top of the C main. Like, I don't think, or whatever the breakdown is, I don't think you would be as happy. Now, you would be racing the same guys. That's what's ironic about it. It's just the letter of the main is different. So it's just a mentality. It's just, I'm winning something kind of mentality. And, you know, I've raced over 40 classes. I've raced RC monster trucks. I've done some dirt oval over 40. I've raced all the different classes, and it is fun to be more competitive in your class because you don't feel like you're, I don't know, a loser, I guess. I don't know. But there is something about it. It makes you feel a little bit more competitive. Like, I'm racing for something.
So Kyle mentions he's pushing for a 50 plus class. So we don't have a 50 plus class, right? Why is it, no. Why is it just 40? What about the guys that are 50? What happens to them?
They're racing 40 plus right now. It is a mess. You could have a 50 plus class and people would race it. And then there would be like, well, I'm 49 and I race 50 class. And it'd be like, nope, not yet.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. When I played Call of Duty back in the day, I was good at it, right? Now, you know, I was in there ranking up there pretty good. I was in the top, you know, I was up there, top five, sometimes finished first or whatever. I would trash talk, do all that stuff. And then I would say late 30s, I started noticing I was going lower and lower, you know, down the ranks and doing bad in the games. And now, if I log on and play multiplayer, yeah, the 12-year-olds are telling me off. So they're destroying me and telling me what they did to my mom last night. But anyway, I understand completely. I did the same thing. So, but that's the thing. Like, I've noticed, like, I was blaming it, and you can ask Carrie this. I went out and bought a new TV because I was saying, oh, my TV's too old. I got some input lag there. So I went and bought a better TV. And then I'm like, well, maybe I need a controller that's not Bluetooth.
Substitute that for different car kit or radio, and that would be the RC. Right.
So I was trying to blame everything else, and then I had to accept the fact, you know, well, Carrie was just like, you're getting old, face it. But I was like, well, maybe my Bluetooth controller should get one of those competition controllers where you plug it in. Remember me and Kirby bought those? And you know, guys were saying, oh, don't use Bluetooth because there's a little bit of lag, so just make sure you use input, plug it in, USB port. Tried that, still getting killed. Yeah,
that's the setup.
So again, though, anyway,
one thing that it also you have to do is it has to mean everything to you. The second then you accept the second that you start accepting something other than what you're accustomed to, you're already slipping. You're slipping down a notch because you're starting to accept something that's less than what you're capable of or you think that you're capable of. And this is a whole thing. This is a whole conversation into itself, is how to not use it as an excuse or think that, you know, that it is becoming a disadvantage. And how do you fight that? You know, I don't know, because the second something happens and it's hard. It's hard to fight it. And I know when I was 16, 17, 18, whatever, 20, I guess you also feel when you're in that zone, there is no excuses. You're like, well, I can't say that I'm too young. I had somebody tell me that we were at the regionals a few years back. They're like, we were racing at Coral Springs, and I won two-wheel drive or whatever the class was we were racing, and the guy said, well, you know, my son just didn't have the experience that you guys have. You know, he's just too young. And I'm like, well, I won my first regionals when I was his age. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I know what you're saying.
It's like, so you're using the excuse that he's too young to win. I'm using the excuse that I'm too old. So how many excuses can we have? Right? Like,
right.
It's one big excuse. Yeah. So at some point,
it's like me trying to blame everything, the equipment.
Mm-hmm. There can only be so many excuses. At some point, you just have to either got it or you don't. And, Justin, he's right. There's obviously a point to where I think that meaning everything to you is a big part of it. And I remember when I would, when you're younger and you're more focused on these goals, it does mean everything to you. And it's crushing when it doesn't go your way. And now the older you get, you can find excuses why you can let things roll off of you. You can let these things kind of go past and say, all right, well, you know, I'm getting older and I haven't been doing this, or I wasn't ready. And you can make all these things and you can justify it. And by Monday morning, you're okay again. Where it was like, I remember being, between 16 and 20, and it's like, by Monday, I'm not over it. Tuesday, I'm not over it. Wednesday, I'm not over it. Thursday, it's like taking days and weeks. And then, you still think back about it and you're like, I'm still not over this.
Yeah.
I'm not ever getting over this.
Nope.
People say that thing. You just got to get over it. No.
No. No, I won't.
No. You don't understand. I'm not getting over it. It's just, I'm forgetting about it temporarily. That's really what happens. And then somebody brings it up and you're like, you know what?
All right, we'll switch topics there on the whole age thing. Kyle Predmore, any chance spring INS will be rescheduled, or are we just going to wait for next year?
At the moment, I think it's going to be canceled personally. I don't think there's going to be a way to put it all in, to get it all in into the schedule. We'll see what Scott says. If he has some definite ideas or plans of when we can do it, then we'll consider it, because it's a good stop. So, but I mean, man, the further we get away from these, I mean, that was supposed to be in April or early May, something like that. So, yeah.
Oh, we got some more people chiming in about the 40.
The other thing I will say about RC racing is our crowd is getting older too. So it's like whatever that, you talk about your demographic, whatever that window is, ours is going toward the older demographic. And, there is kids and younger people that do it, but the reason these other classes are successful is because a lot of our racers are older. A lot of our racers are 40 plus years old. That's what this appeals to, and that's who can pay for it, are people that are the age in that age range. So that's why these classes are fun.
Drew says, I have my best results the past several years now that I'm running over 40 class and having a blast. I stopped taking it so serious and just went out to have fun. Results have been awesome. There you go. Forty class.
I mean, where we were just at, I think we went over this about talking about the Nitro Challenge, but I got to set my alarm for tomorrow because
1 p.m. alarm time.
I set it for 6:45 a.m. So, yeah, we ran the Nitro Challenge, and I want to say that the most amount of entries were coming from the 40-plus classes. And we're going to do the PMB next weekend, and I won't be surprised that there'll be some of the biggest classes are in the over 40 because that's our demographic. Lordy, 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 look who's 40.
Justin says just move all INS to next year.
It could happen. So what else we got? I went through my list. I got my list. I went through. We got into some Lordy, lordy, lordy.
Don't forget, folks, to send in your suggestions for our football podcast, Spencer Rifkin and I, during the season. Be doing the it's not going to just be Patriots. Mostly Patriots, but then we're going to throw in, give you our predictions and stuff.
Be discussing all teams.
Maybe we'll give something away if we use your suggestions. So just send them in to us. Message me on Facebook, radioimpound@gmail.com. I need a name for the show. Kyle says you need a younger crowd coming up, or it will be all 40 plus. Right. Well, we got the young kids coming up.
We have young kids. Yeah. But there's not as many of them.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Ron asks, whatever happened to Jason's monster truck? I'm assuming he's talking about
it. I sold it to Fred Reap, who has it in Missouri being restored. So Fred works here with us at J Concepts and friend of mine. And so it's kind of, I'll say, still in the family, I guess you could say. But I do have in the office here. Let's see if I can see it. You can see it. See it right here? Right. How do I do this? Right here.
Right here. There. Right here. Right there.
Yeah. That's the title.
Oh. There's the title.
So that's the title for Bigfoot 4 is in a frame on the wall.
So what's Fred at the wrestle you for it or what?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're having a pay-per-view event.
Title on the pole match. John, this is what Jason's waiting for. Yeah,
buy it back. It's like, hey, I'll give you another 5,000. This is no small project. I'm glad I don't have it anymore because it's just way over my head. Or way over my effort level.
Kyle says, bring back the club kits like the B6 and the B6D club racers.
I think the problem with that is it wasn't successful. They didn't sell. Because if you're a racer, I don't know, it's another conversation again, but Paul and I talked about this when they came out with those cars, and people aren't going in to buy that stuff. If you're going to buy a race car, I think you go in to buy the best race car, right? So,
yeah, I just remember, like, I just wanted the best, whatever I can get.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to buy the ready-to-run kit for sure. I was just like, man, I don't want that. I want this. I want the best of the best.
Kids aren't doing.
And it feels like a competition at the race when you show up. You need to have the top shit.
You're the top dog.
Yeah. I think that's the problem, though. The mentality is I need to have the top stuff to race.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's...
Well, you look at the way everybody approaches things. And, you know, Kirby sends us the links to the mountain bikes he wants and stuff like that. And he's not looking for the RTR mountain bike. He's not looking for the one that's like, oh, this is a good budget mountain bike. They want the best. People want the best that's in their budget. And I think that's just human nature. You buy something online. I was somewhere the other day and I'm like, Allison and I went to this place in Orlando called, is it Shooter's World? I think it's called Shooter's World. And you're looking at guns, right?
Oh yeah. You were sending photos.
Yeah. We were at this place called Shooter's World. This place is amazing here. Anyway, just the level of participation they get. It's what people think when they open an indoor RC track, what it's going to be like. Just people going in and out with all their equipment, buying stuff constantly. There's a 50-yard range, 25-yard track, what it's going to be like. Just people going in and out with all their equipment, buying stuff constantly. There's a 50-yard range, 25-yard. This is insane how popular this is. And there's food courts in there and everything. Anyway. So I'm in there looking at this stuff and I'm thinking, okay, what's the best?
Right. Yeah.
I'm just like looking at the cabinets. Oh, here's the Glocks. Here's the this and here's the that. And I'm just looking at, you're looking at the thing. You're looking at the price and you're just like, hey, well, this one's $600. Oh, well, this one's $1,900. Well, what's the difference between this one? It's like, oh, this one must be, so.
Yeah. That's how I am.
It's tough. And it's tough to not want something that's cool. I mean, to me, it's Kirby sent me a link the other day to a mountain bike and I'm just like, I want this thing. I don't even want to ride a mountain bike, but I just want this bike because it looks so cool. And you go buy a car, you probably buy the best car you can in your budget or whatever the case may be. And if it was unlimited, what are you going to get? You're going to get
the limited version.
Yeah.
The top of the line. The what was the Ford Explorer back in the day? Eddie Bauer. Yep. You're going to get the Eddie Bauer edition.
Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, God, he's got the Eddie Bauer.
Yeah. Kirby's brother had the Eddie Bauer edition. We used to drive that to lunch every day at Trinity.
That was the lunch wagon?
That was the lunch wagon, the Eddie Bauer Ford Explorer. And then Dieter would show up once in a while with that van. Remember the van back in the day?
Trinity van with the
purple. The Trinity van, yep. Yep.
Check out this brush motor here.
Ah, it's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, we got the brushes out.
Oh, man. Got a little tear in my eye. Beautiful.
Whoa. Brush is tight in here. This could have been affecting my performance.
Uh-oh.
I don't like that. Holy cow.
What'd you have that in?
We got a monster truck class called Sport Mod. And is this what they would call, you could get a hung brush? Wow, that thing is not coming out of there. I got to get serious. Whew. What's ironic is I was just writing some instructions the other day about this.
John says, I have a $400 rod and reel to go fishing. God damn, $400.
Wow. See?
It's carbon fiber. What's the deal?
Yeah, it's just got, everybody.
It's got awesome ball bearings in the reel.
It's all ball bearings.
Ceramic bearings.
It's all ball bearings today.
So when you buy a car kit today, you just throw away the bearings, right? And just get new ones?
No. I use the bearings that come with my B6.
Yeah. Okay.
There's some people that buy ceramics and stuff, but because I think that's going to help them with stock racing, but I don't know. Mm. Maybe it does.
Justin says, Jason, what have you seen Mayfield do with 8-scale that is unique and others don't do besides his driving?
What does he do with his 8-scale besides the driving?
Justin's trying to get some secrets here.
I don't know. I'll keep thinking.
All right.
What does he do?
Kyle, box stock slash needs a resurgence.
It would be nice if it did. It was strong in 2012. RC was really... Racing, RC Racing was really popping.
I have a new Never Ran P2K2 brush stock. Wow, that's awesome.
I'm really upset that this brush was so bound up in here. that's not good.
P2K motor, baby. Burns a 1/4 ounce of sage and whispers sweet nothings.
I still can't think of what Mayfield does really all that different. He doesn't really do a lot different. It's just hard to, it's really, sometimes it's just hard to describe that.
It is mostly driving.
It's a lot. It is a lot.
It's the tires.
I mean, I'm sure he has his, you know, the way he builds some of his diffs and stuff like that. But I mean, I've seen him drive all these cars and, you can get away with a lot. If you're a wheel, you can get away with a lot. I think I did this story before.
We did earlier, Kyle.
I told this story before, but at the 2005 Worlds, it was the first Worlds that Mayfield ever went to, and he put his cars in my room after the mains, because I forget what they were going to go do, but they went somewhere and they needed the cars to bring down to the banquet. Sorry. So he needed the cars for the banquet, but they were going to go do something. So he's like, hey, can you bring my cars to the banquet when you come down there? Because we're going to go, okay, that's fine. So I'll bring these cars to the banquet. So I'm looking at his cars in my room. And, you know, obviously we spent a whole couple weeks with him at the race. But, I mean, the cars are straight off the track, and you're looking at the car, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you're looking at the rear camber, and you're like, well, it's like the camber's not the same on both sides. The toe-in's not perfect on here in the front. The car was not perfect at all. Like, and he just took it off the track where he was just killing it. And a lot of that stuff just sticks out of my mind, that if you're a wheel and you can wheel it. But you know, he's been, over the years, he's gotten to be a better wrench with his cars, and it's helped, you know, him get better because he's more particular. But I'm sure he has his own methods for building his diffs and his shocks and stuff like that. But when I've been at the races, it doesn't look any different than anybody else's, or feel that much different than anybody else's. I think what he's probably the best at is adapting to what's happening with the track. on the fly. So that's a big thing when you're racing any of these cars, is you can only get a couple warm-up laps. You only get a couple warm-up laps to really get a feel for what the track is like now when you're on it. And I think he always does a good job of adjusting on the fly to what's going on. And that's probably one of the things that he's the best at, is you give him two or three warm-up laps, he understands what he can and can't do if the track changed. And I think that's something that he's always been really, really good at. And I don't know if that's not necessarily even just your talent. That is just something that, to me, it's just understanding that things change and you have to adapt. And I think that's probably what he's probably the best at, to me, is just getting the car out there and getting the most out of a couple warm-up laps.
Nice, Kyle. Thank you. It's the other way around.
Yeah. I think one of the things, too, is he's good at living and dying with a decision that he will make. So a lot of people are looking around trying to find what that magical setup is from somebody else. But I think there's something to be said for having your mind made up that you're going to make a change, and you stick with it, and you go with it, and you don't wait for somebody else to do it for you. So like, if you think this is going to be better, and in your mind you think it's going to be better, you do it and you live with that result. And I think that's been something that he's good at.
All right, guys, that was good. Got a lot of questions. Pretty cool doing this live and interacting with everybody. Enjoy it. That was episode 215. 215. Still climbing. Still doing what we do. Somebody asked me the other day how long. I said 8 years. It was 8 years in April. So still doing it, bro. What was that stat that we saw the other day? 75% of the podcasters quit before they get to episode 50.
75%.
75%.
Before they get to episode 50.
God damn.
You're in a very small percentile, probably. Well, you're in the 25 percentile.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. But, so, again, we did a live video yesterday. If you missed it, Spencer... The road to 300, absolutely. We're not going to start that though right now. It's a little early. We get excited around 270. Yeah. I don't even know where I was at. That's it. 215. What are you going to add to it, Jason? What are you doing this weekend anyway? What's going on?
I'm going to the Super Cup Championship Series in Coral Springs.
That's right. Leaving tomorrow.
Yeah.
Set the alarm early, 6:45, get up.
Mm. Yeah, Paul's already texting me.
He's like, yeah, dude.
I'll pick you up. I'm just like, oh, man.
That early?
But, you know, the good thing is you get early. Maybe I'll get a coffee tomorrow.
You still doing the Starbucks? The minty, very, whatever. What do you call it? Very berry.
Maybe I'll get a latte tomorrow.
Okay.
What is it? Vanilla latte. That's what I was getting at in Slovakia. You'd make it in there, in the push the button latte.
Right. I don't know all those fancy names. Like, first of all, they wouldn't even allow me in Starbucks as soon as they see me. So I'm a Dunkin' Donuts guy. You know, it's simple. Now you go to Starbucks and it's like you got this. I don't even know how to order. I don't even know how to order from Starbucks. I have to have Carrie do it for me because you got that, like, the grande. Is that a large?
It's grande, venti. Well, actually, it's tall, like grande, venti, and trenta. That's the size. Oh,
my God. And that's just a coffee. Is that a regular coffee?
And any drink size. It doesn't matter what you get. Those are the way the sizes are classified.
You guys in the chat, Dunkin' or Starbucks? Yeah. Starbucks is just too fancy for me.
You know, honestly, most people tell me they really prefer Dunkin's coffee. I've heard a lot of people tell me that.
Yeah.
And I think it's cheaper too.
Starbucks is probably crap, but it's a whole status symbol thing. You know, you carry a Starbucks cup around. You look cool, I guess, right?
I guess.
Jason goes for the taste, not for the...
I do. I just get that one drink. I was in the drive the other day. Guy's like, do you just get this drink?
And look at this. Yeah. We got Ben Warner, Duncan.
Maybe tomorrow it'll be so early. I'll be like, all right, I'll get a coffee and we'll get some Chick-fil-A, those like chicken minis.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm not you know what? I'm not a fan of Chick-fil-A. I'll say it. There you go. What's the matter? Okay. No. Is anybody else out there with me? Like I've had Chick-fil-A. It's not bad, but it's nothing like I've been there and I'm like,
that's T-Tran. He's just like, it's just a chicken sandwich. Deal, which it is, but yeah, it's just
I'm like, what is so great about this?
Fast food, though. It is just fast food, though. I love Chick-fil-A. There'll be a day I'll wake up and I'll just like, I'm not gonna have Chick-fil-A.
What's so special? Here, we got Justin saying I'm crazy in the chat. What's so special about Chick-fil-A? Like, I could.
That's just, there's something about the nuggets, the way they taste. I think they're just amazing.
He's saying, yeah, Justin, you're not missing anything. All right. Justin waffle Doyle got fries it. Are good too. What's that?
The waffle fries are good.
Too. I don't like them at all. They're horrible. All right. Yeah, I don't know. They're just nothing special. There's nothing like special.
We'll be there in the morning. We'll get the little breakfast minis they have. Those things are killer. They could just sell the biscuits. Have you ever had those?
No.
Good.
Justin says I gotta get the Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yeah,
so you gotta drown it in sauce to make it taste good. Got you.
I don't use any of the sauce.
Look at this. It's not special. I'm with Gotti. There you go, Billy. He's a good friend of mine. I like you, Billy.
We agree.
Yeah. All right. Wow, we still got pissed they took away the breakfast bagel up here. Oh, wow. So they took away the breakfast bagel at Chick-fil-A. Up there, wherever he's at. North Carolina. Isn't that what you said you were going to get tomorrow?
No, the chicken minis.
Chicken minis.
I think they're called chicken minis.
All right.
They basically have like a little roll. Little roll and then the good ice.
The good ice. What's the good ice? Tell me.
The little pebbles.
The little pebbles. Okay, I will agree on that one. Okay.
The good ice. I love it.
The good ice.
I mean, the fact that we all see that Gotti would love the chicken mini see.
Okay. Well, I'll have to.
The sauce that I do like,
we'll try that.
I have had the sauce. The guy's got me kind of going on the, is it called roasted honey barbecue? That's pretty good.
Okay.
And the good ice.
We're not getting any votes here for Starbucks, just so you know. Duncan's winning by a landslide.
Yeah, I mean.
Three votes.
I just go there for that one drink. That's the only thing. I mean, if I was going to get coffee, I would probably go to Dunkin' too. But I just get that one drink. So
I avoid places that look too fancy. I tried the one in Target. You know, I was in Target, which that too is like I should be at Walmart. But I was at Target, and they had a Starbucks in there. And that's where I tried that drink that you told me to.
Okay.
Or the Very Berry.
That's it.
Yeah. The little seeds like nearly cracked every, you know, my teeth, or they get stuck in between them. You got to floss then. Yeah. Anyway, well, folks,
you're a big flosser. So.
A big flosser. I'm at the dentist every 2 weeks. All right, guys, that was 2:15. Appreciate everybody joining in on every 2 weeks. Wow, I used to when I had my Invisaligns. I had to go every 2 weeks for my tray, my new tray. So
get tightened up.
But anytime Jason asks me like anything, I'm like, I'm at the dentist. So it's like a running joke that we have. Like, I'm always there. So,
and my dentist thinks I have Harold's in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And he's like, Jason, do you floss? And Jason's like, oh, yeah, I do. And there's blood all over his face. Yeah, I floss all the time.
So that's the sign, is if you're bleeding when they floss, that means you don't.
Right, right. If your gums are bleeding, that means you don't floss.
They know.
They know. They know you're lying. Yeah. All right, guys. We will catch you on 216.